Shit right. happens that doesn't make sense and right. maybe will never make sense.
Right.
But you don't have to understand it in order to decide to frame it in a way that makes you empowered by what you've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make sense of it. You just have to not blame other people ultimately when you move through your anger, which is important to
right.
move through.
Right.
Not blame yourself.
Right.
Not blame God.
Right.
And not victimize yourself to what happened. Ultimately find a way to be empowered by it.
Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The following program comes from executive producer Lillian Garcia. Every athlete is on this quest. Every performer dives in head first, battling real life challenges and overcoming obstacles in an effort to make their dreams reality. Singer, speaker, and 15-year WWE host Lillian Garcia was the first woman to ever announce WrestleMania and is now the PFL MMA cage announcer.
Oh, yeah!
And now she's giving you an all-access pass to the human interest stories of elite athletes, extraordinary entertainers, and wellness experts. Now, let's embark on another fascinating journey of chasing glory with your host, Lillian Garcia.
Hey guys, welcome to Chasing Glory. I am Lillian Garcia and I am excited. Why am I excited? Because for the next hour, hour and a half or so, I get to be with you. Nothing else matters in the world. This is the connection that I need right now, and I'm just really, really glad that you're giving me the time to spend it with me. Spend it with me, to spend it with my guests who are pouring their hearts out. And in queue, my guest today is no different. This man is awesome. What a gem. I actually found him queue for the very first time when I was at a Powerful You event, and he blew me away, literally. I mean, the way this man speaks the spoken word, holy cow. And he inspired me after this interview to write my own poem. And I'm actually going to share that with you because I promised him when I did an IG live, if you kept up with that, I had him on one of my daily IG lives. And I told him, as I shared one of the poems with him, I told him that I was going to share the other one. So after the interview with NQ, I will share the very first poem that I wrote after having this interview with him. I've never written a poem before, but that night it hit me. It hit me so hard. I was laying down to go to sleep, but all of a sudden words just started coming out and I was like, I got to put this on paper. And I did. And then I read it the next morning and I was like, I wrote that? Where did that come from? And so I'm going to challenge you guys as you listen to this interview with NQ, think about that for yourselves. This is a really good time to do that. During quarantine time, anytime, but especially during quarantine time, when you're trying to find things to stimulate you, things to do during this time that you can really challenge and go inside of yourself like you've never done before, trust me, writing a poem, no matter what, whether it's something painful or something hopeful or anything like that, just getting it down on paper, it's pretty fun. It's creative and it's cool. And then you look back and you go, whoa, that was coming out of my thoughts. So NQ, I thank you for that. Whoa, that's a good segue as I hit the book to announce that NQ has a new book. That's right, Inquire Within. That's what we're asking you guys to do is inquire within. It is so important at this time to do that because that's what this, for me, I think that that's what this whole time is all about is inquiring within. Okay, but before I get to NQ, I just want to ask you guys, how are you doing out there? I know I can't hear your responses, but the reason I ask that is because I've actually reached out to a few friends of mine. I'm using this time to reconnect with friends. That's right. And I encourage the rest of you to do so. And there's one particular friend who said to me, you know, I'm feeling bad about myself during this time. And I was like, why? She's like, because I'm hearing other people using this time to work on their projects, to work on their passion, to work on their creativity, to work on this, to work on that. And she goes, and I'm finding myself not being creative during this time and not really wanting to work on anything and just sit and watch movies and just sit and talk to friends and just sit and really do nothing. And you know what I told her? It's okay. I know that there's other mentors out there that are talking about the grind and keep going and this is the time to do this and this is the time to do that. Who said so? Who said so? To me, I think this is a time to listen to what your body needs. Listen to what your mind needs. And you know what I've done too? I've colored. That's right. I bought a Minions coloring book and I am coloring the Minions because I'm getting tapped into my creative child juices. I don't want to do anything but listen sometimes to music as I'm coloring. And who says that's right or wrong? I'm not judging and I'm not going to judge myself and my choices. And I'm telling you guys, don't judge your choices right now. This is a very scary time. So whatever it is that you are choosing to do, it's exactly what you should be doing. As long as you're not hurting yourself, right? Don't ever hurt yourself. I think it's important to still care about your mental state and still care about your physical state because you don't want to come out of this worse than you were before. But if you're not hurting yourself and you don't want to necessarily work on that project that you think you should be working on that project, then don't work on the project. Go color in a coloring book. Go listen to good music. Trust me, if you give yourself enough time to also recharge the batteries, then when you come out of this, you will be better off for it. You will be ready to grind later. But if you're not ready to grind now, it's okay. It's okay. I'm giving you permission. Relax. Relax, relax, relax. All right, so I'm going to go back to NQ because him and his spoken word is something that is very much inspiring me and something that I'm enjoying just listening to. And remember, the audiobook as well, you can follow the audiobook while you're reading the book. It's pretty cool because you can hear his voice as he's reading the poems. Make sense? Okay, so at the end of this, remember, I'm going to share with you the poem. Now, usually I go into the bio right here, and I am going to go into the bio, but I'm going to do it a little different. We're going to change things up. Why? Because NQ has this incredible video that I really want you guys to see. When I saw this, it was so inspiring to me that I was like, man, I gotta share it with my Chasing Glory family. And you guys are my Chasing Glory family. And I do want to remind you, I love the fact that you love hearing from the superstars. That's awesome. But I also want to expand your horizons by introducing you to people that you might not know. You may not know NQ. And if you do, you know how amazing he is. So I just like to expand this Chasing Glory community and family to bringing you people that are blowing my mind and that I think that can provide value for you. So I'm going to read his bio and then we're going to go into the special video. So you get to really see a little bit of who NQ is before going into this in-depth interview, which, by the way, he said he's never gone this deep before. So I appreciate it. Thank you, NQ, for being so vulnerable and so real with us here on Chasing Glory. I got him here before all this coronavirus pandemic stuff and the lockup and all, which I'm so glad that I did. So that's why we're together. But it's a real gift to you. Okay, so let me tell you about NQ. Born in Santa Monica, California, to a single mom, Adam Schmalholz. I hope I pronounced that right. Schmalholz. I like that. Began rapping at the age of 13 and had full confidence that he would be signed to a major record label and become an internationally known MC. But at the age of 19, his path changed when he attended an open mic event in Los Angeles. Being inspired by all the talent surrounding him, his rapping abilities would transform to more of a poetic form of expression. He would take up the stage name NQ, which is short for In Question, and has captivated audiences with his groundbreaking performances. NQ was the first poet to perform at Cirque du Soleil at a production that they had, and also performed on HBO's Russell Simmons Deaf Poetry Jam. He has shared the stage with musical artists such as Eminem, John Legend and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, as well as perform for Quincy Jones. He has been featured on A&E and ESPN, and his videos have a combined total of over 70 million views. That's right, you heard me say it, 70 million views. His accomplishments include the National Poetry Slam Championship and being a multi-platinum songwriter. That's right, he's a songwriter writing hits for such artists as Selena Gomez, Miley Cyrus, Mike Posner, Aloe Black, and Foster the People. He was named to Oprah Winfrey's Soulful 100 list and also co-wrote the anthem for the 2014 FIFA World Cup. In addition to his poetry and musical artistry, top organizations such as Nike, Instagram, Spotify, the Grammy Foundation, to name a few, have brought in Q to motivate their teams through his keynote speeches and amazing storytelling abilities. He continuously writes to entertain, to inspire, and challenge his audiences to look deeper into their own experiences as well as the world around them. Ladies and gentlemen, get ready as it's about to get real, raw, and inspiring with my guest, NQ. Check him out right now.
I'm always asking questions about myself, about my reality, about my purpose. There's never a point where I won't have questions about things. That's part of what makes this life experience so beautiful. But the questions sometimes are more important than the answers. So I keep asking. I was raised by a single mother. My dad was not around. And I didn't meet him until I was 15. I really believe that my dad was my biggest spiritual teacher in his absence and his presence. And I think that it kind of made me internalize a lot of questions that I had about not fitting in the world. But I think that fed into my chosen life purpose and my art. And so I'm unbelievably grateful for it.
My father never played catch with me or gave advice. But if nothing else, that man gave me my life. And that's enough for me. If that's all he could ever give. Because I'm appreciative for every day I get to live. And even though I don't need my dad to validate, I thought that I should write this poem to thank him for creating me. Because every moment that we are alive is like a gift. And if that's not enough to forgive, then what is?
I became obsessive with hip-hop and ultimately poetry. And I think I needed an escape from whatever was going on in my life, and this was my outlet. The freedom that comes from being able to speak your mind and tell your story and to not have any rules, and the rhythms and the rhymes and how they bounced off of each other. It was really amazing, and I absolutely fell in love. Wake people up to not being a victim to their reality. And that's been a pretty big burden in my own life, I would say. But your superpower is your kryptonite. So I'm continuing to learn more and more about myself as I explore my writing. But how I feel doesn't necessarily affect how the audience feels. I'm providing them with questions that they can answer themselves, and sometimes that leads to something proactive and a real change in their reality that hopefully leads them more towards happiness and joy. I looked into the mirror and I confronted what I saw, accepting the reflection by embracing everything and directing the connection into breaking down the walls by reflecting the perfection of the God inside us all.
If pain is dragging,
waiting for a dreamer to come wake us out of the woods, use it. Community is as important as an institution. We are here to change the world. I want people to question their reality and to inspire
individual and social and political change at the highest level through my art and through my life. And I really do think that's what humanity needs more of right now, is empathy. You know, is people listening to other people's stories and then telling their own and being vulnerable from a place of strength. And I'm taking my own medicine too. It's not like I think that other people need to do this. I'm doing it. That's why I'm writing. I want to disappear when I'm on stage. I actually think that my personality gets in the way. I literally would love to be able to get on stage and just be. And that would be the best poem I've ever written.
Yes, it is about to get real raw and inspiring with NQ. I'm so excited to have you here. I'm so excited since I saw you at Powerful You.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So let's go back, because that's how I met you. It was last year in May, I think it was. We were here in LA, huge Powerful You event. And I remember Steph Purpura and James, both of them saying, man, when this guy hits the stage, you're going to be like, oh God, just brace yourself. And sure enough, you hit the stage and both Henry and I were backstage going, what? Dude, you dropped some words.
Thank you.
You're so good at what you do. But I'm sure that that did not come like overnight.
Yeah.
Right? People, or is it a natural gift that you've always had?
No. I definitely had to work at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably put 25,000 hours into rhymes and language and communicating a message through poetry and spoken word.
So, and they say that. They say that it takes, what, 10,000 hours in order for you to become an expert at something.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is people don't have the patience anymore nowadays.
Yeah.
They want to become good at something overnight, and then they get so frustrated. But I would say, what was it about words? Because I love to songwrite. But it's also a battle for me.
What is the battle?
The battle is the words. Rhymes, not rhymes, but I mean music-wise, as far as melody lines, I come up with it all the time. I'm like constantly going, oh, what about this melody line and that melody line? Then concept about what the song is going to be about comes to me naturally.
Right, right.
But then trying to write words that aren't corny, or you know, that's just like the same old thing that you hear over and over, that's a battle for me. And so I often go, man, people that can write words, is it something that they're just naturally gifted at, or is it something that they've had to really cultivate? And you said you've had to cultivate.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I fell in love with hip-hop when I was like 13 years old. I grew up in Santa Monica, California. I was raised by a single parent. My mom was a school teacher. My dad was not around at all. And I think that I was very drawn to this musical style because I saw people expressing themselves and related to it. And I started to freestyle with my friends. And I think it was my first form of meditation. It was, I guess when you freestyle, you're not thinking about anything else but the next word.
Yeah.
Or the next rhyme. So it puts you in the moment like nothing else can. And that was my first outlet for the things that were kind of suppressed inside of me that I didn't know how to get out or explain or even understand. And then when I was 19, I wound up in an open mic for poets in Los Angeles. And it's called the Poetry Lounge. And still, they get 350 people every single week.
Wow.
It's like church without religion. Literally, people show up and they get on stage, they sign up on a list, and people listen to them express. And it was the first environment that I've ever been in that I saw people being celebrated for their vulnerability. So when they got up and they said something that was true, everyone in the audience was like, you know, they would cheer for them. It was a celebration.
Yeah.
Of whatever story they had in their life, whatever experience they had, whatever thought they had. And it was really moving. I mean, some of the best art experiences I've ever had was as an audience member watching other poets on stage. And I got up, I started doing my rapping a cappella that night and just literally never left. I went every single Tuesday night and put up new work. That place became a community
the community became a family. And over the years, I was on HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam, and we won the National Poetry Slam Championships. And one day I woke up and I realized I was more of a poet than an MC, and that was the start of the journey.
I love the fact that you said that, though, about how vulnerability, there's so much strength in it, because that's the same thing that's even happened here in Chasing Lori.
Yeah.
So many of the guests that come on and they talk about their vulnerabilities, and then they even say afterwards, they were like, wow, it's like a therapy session.
Yeah, yeah.
We all have such struggles, and we get scared to share that because we feel like we're going to get judged. We feel like, oh, I have to make sure to let people think that everything is fine,
right.
You know, that I'm a winner.
Right.
You know? But it is in that vulnerable space that also there's so much strength. There's
well, that's
so
our
much
humanity.
Strength. Yeah.
I mean, it's really the things that we don't talk about. You know, the circumstances are always different, but the human experience is the same. You know, and if you want someone to be vulnerable with you, you have to lead by example. You have to be vulnerable with them. You know, I do these poetry workshops all around the country and the world. I do performances, but the workshops are really about providing a space for other people to explore these stories that are unexpressed through this particular genre. But it doesn't really matter what genre of art you use. It's just about getting it out of your system. You know, it's better out than in. And what I find over and over again is that when people get on stage and they say something, they realize they're not alone.
Yeah.
Because they get that mirror from the audience, and the audience gets that mirror from them. And so it's the process of alchemy, you know. And the reason that I do it is because I see that over and over again, and the way that I do it is by stepping into it myself first. It would be irresponsible for me to ask the audience to be vulnerable if I wasn't first vulnerable.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're vulnerable with someone and they don't respond well, they're probably a fucking asshole.
Right.
And you don't have to hang out with them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so it's actually a shortcut into figuring out whether or not you want to spend more time with somebody.
Yeah. And did you grow up at all with, especially being a man, where vulnerability, it was like kind of ingrained in the fact that vulnerability is weakness?
Yeah.
And so you had a hard time because men have told don't cry.
Yeah.
I think now it's more accepted. But for a long time, especially because you said you didn't have your father growing up, which obviously
right.
I want to touch on. So how was it? Was it hard for you at first to be vulnerable?
I mean, I would say my mom taught me to be open with my emotions, but the world reflected back that it wasn't safe to do that. You know, and I learned that pretty quickly.
What instance do you remember?
I mean, many, many instances.
Yeah.
You know, so I think... it's not only your, you know, nurture, but it's also your environment, you
yeah.
know, and wherever you are, you kind of learn how to operate based on that. And many times when we're kids, we're not really able to emotionally process the things that are happening to us. So we just go into an unconscious survival mode. And I think that if vulnerability is weakness in an environment, you're, of course, going to shut down to being vulnerable or being open about what's going on. And it makes sense. But what winds up happening is then we drag that into future situations where there is no threat.
Yeah.
So when we become adults, we're just kind of replaying that same record over and over again. And we don't know that we're listening to this music, you know? And so there's a unconscious way that we behave. And something happens and we get triggered by this and... we're not responding to actually what is happening. We're responding to some unresolved past that we're dragging into this future situation. So I think the more that we can acknowledge that, the more that we can alchemize that, the more we can actually act from reality, you know, what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Rather than some history that we still haven't worked through.
History or fear in the future.
Right.
There's so much fear in the future that really cripples us. I suffer through from that.
Yeah, of course,
lot.
Me too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And sometimes it really does steal my joy of today, and then I get so mad at myself, and I'm like, what are you so worried about of something that hasn't even happened, or
right.
the fear of this, that, you know, I think we talked about it off camera at the very beginning, how we both grew up with this money security, money
yeah,
security,
yeah,
money
course.
Security. So when I get worried, like if there's not where I feel like there's enough in coming in the future, then I go, oh my God, how are we going to have a roof over our head? Right. How are we going to, you know, but it hasn't happened at all,
right.
not yet, but it's stealing and it's robbing my joy. And I go, how do I do this? How do I stop that?
Right. Well, it takes you out of the present moment too, which is the only thing that we have.
Right.
All we have is right now.
Right now.
Nothing else exists except for this particular moment. So, you know, if you change the present, you change the past and the future.
But knowing that, how do you then disrupt that program that runs in your head that goes, yeah, but it's natural for you to worry about your future. It's natural because mm-hmm. that's the way your parents grew up. That's what was instilled in you. It's natural. It's natural. Because I look at myself, I look sometimes in the mirror and I'm like, hello, wake up.
Right.
Right now you have a roof over your head. You have food to eat. Like, now is all that matters. But yet inside, I'm like, it's still, why do I still worry about that? And I don't know how to like immediately, you know, completely erase it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a process, you know, and it's a process for all of us. It's not a destination,
like, what
do you do? It's a journey. I mean, I have different practices that help bring me back to the moment. I mean, I meditate. I've been meditating for 4 years straight, twice a day. I literally never miss. It's non-negotiable for me. And I use that word very specifically. Like, when I started meditating, it was actually right after my father died, which I thought was not going to be an issue for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much more impactful than I would have expected. And I remember I was like in Joshua Tree with a girlfriend at the time. And we were just kind of exploring. And I said, I'm going to sit down on this rock and meditate. It was the first time I had ever actually decided to meditate. I think I had dabbled in different environments in the past, but I always said, oh, my mind is working too much. You know, I had insomnia for many, many years. Mm. You know, I was like, I'm not good at meditation. And I sat down and I was high.
That helps.
Well, it could help or not help,
okay.
depending upon many
situations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so I sat down and I was on this rock. And the thing is that I had a realization during the meditation. And the realization was that I had never understood what meditation was before. And I realized that it was a gym for letting go.
Mm,
that's all meditation is.
Heard it put that way. I love it.
And so basically you're practicing letting go of your thoughts and your emotions over and over again. And like anything else, you're building that muscle up. And life is literally about letting go.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, you let go of everything.
Yeah.
You build your life, you build your identity, you accomplish all of these things, and then in the end, you let it all go. So you're practicing letting go of your thoughts and your emotions so that when you're in the moment and you get triggered, you're better and stronger at letting go and returning to what's actually happening. And I think if you act from what's happening, you have way more power to decide how you want to respond. So that's one of the practices I use. And
love it.
You know, writing has been a huge thing for me. You know, therapy has been a huge thing for me. Still don't understand why people judge therapists. It's like, you
right?
don't want to fucking have a coach for your life.
Yeah. Amen.
For your life.
Amen.
You know, so there's a lot of things that I pursue that have helped me. And every area of my life has continued to get better and better and better.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's touch on the fact that you, like you said, you didn't know your father.
Yeah.
How then that did affect you. But so take us, your mom is a single mom, struggling single mom?
She was a school teacher, you know, so she definitely, she gave me a great life.
Is it just you or your brothers?
Yeah, it was just me. I have two brothers and two sisters that I've never met. I met one of them one time.
Oh, wow.
Which was a wild experience of going into a coffee shop and looking around and seeing who kind of looks like me. But on my mom's side, which is obviously where I was raised,
right.
No, it's just me and her.
But wait, where your brothers and sisters were from your father?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So can you give us a little bit of rundown as far as, like, you're with your mom, you're saying, you knew that your dad was not around, like, immediately?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From what you can remember. When was the first time it actually was starting to affect you? Do you remember?
I mean, I would say that it affected me my whole entire life. I mean, as soon as I became aware of myself.
That's what I mean. About what age? Do you remember, like, around what age where you were like, where is dad?
I remember that I had a deal with my mom. My memory is fucking for shit, really.
Okay.
Sorry, is this okay that I'm cursing so much?
It's fine.
Sorry for anybody out there.
It's you. It's fine.
Okay. So I really don't remember much of my past. I have like vague and ambiguous memories.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think that's on purpose? Defense mechanism?
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it bother you that I ask you?
No.
Okay.
No.
I want to make sure that you're comfortable.
No, I'm good at setting boundaries.
Okay.
I'll let you
cool.
know. No, so, you know, but I do have this memory of I had a deal with my mom that we knew where my dad was. So I could send him this Father's Day letter when I was younger. Because I think I had this, like, fantasy that if he knew me, then he would fall in love and come back and create a family. I mean, that's what kids do, you know. You create fantasies around the life that you want to be living.
Right.
And so I think when I turned like 8 or something like that, I don't remember specifically, but she was going to let me send a letter to him. So I sent a letter to him, and I would just go out to the mailbox every day and like wait. And so, of course, you know, it got sent back, basically. It was like a return to sender thing.
Oh, wow.
And that was, I think, pretty heartbreaking for me. And my mom was a fan of beaches. Remember that movie, Beaches,
Livy,
with
Bette
Midler?
Yeah.
So, what's the song? It's The Fly So High.
Oh, yeah.
What is that song?
You Are
you
the
Wind
beneath
My Wings.
Yeah.
Right, this is so crazy.
Yeah.
So she leaves the house one day, and Michael Jordan was my hero.
Okay.
You know, and in many ways, I thought Michael Jordan was like my surrogate father. You know, he's like the person that you look up to when you don't have a male example.
Right.
So I remember I was like really hurt about my actual father not responding. And so one day I put on the You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings, and I had a Michael Jordan poster.
Yeah.
And I unraveled it and I sang as much of the words that I knew.
Oh my God.
To the poster. You know, fly, come fly.
Yeah.
So high. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I fucking cried. And when I was, you know.
Yeah, I'm getting emotional just thinking about that. As a kid, you doing that. Wow.
I never, ever have told that story, I don't think. At least not in an interview or anything like that. But, You know, I'm happy to do a piece. I have a piece in the book
that
is, it's called Father Time, and it's about my experience. And
Please, I think it's, I would love that for anybody out there that is suffering from not having a connection with a parent.
Yeah.
You know.
Father Time. I'm staring at the number, wondering if I should call. I can hear the tick-tock from the clock on the wall as it meshes with the thump-thump beat of my heart. Sometimes getting something started is the hardest part. I didn't meet my dad until I was 15. I'd seen his photograph, but his image was sickening. A coward with a dick, but no balls to back it up. See, when he left me as a kid, I had cause for acting up. The funny thing about hate is the person you hate doesn't feel that hate. You feel that hate, but wait. The weight can be too much for a person to take, and personally, I was hurt, so I just locked it away. I was angry all the time, and I didn't know why. I couldn't handle my rage, so I would hide it inside, pretending everything was fine became a daily pastime. Time passed, and I started to believe in my own lies. I took it out on my mom because she raised me alone. The rage I couldn't own had left me totally numb. It was like landmines in my mind that I didn't understand. So when the boy inside cried, the young man outside yelled. I think I learned about my masculinity from TV. The people weren't real, so I knew they couldn't leave me. I would sit there for hours right in front of the tube. The images that I saw were my depiction of truth. It was manhood in a box, and I bought into it. The censorship of anything inside of me that's sensitive. The sentences, a lifetime of tears suppressed in a stone face, an overblown ego they've distracted through a paper chase. Back when I was 9, I imagined in my mind that my father was a spy working for the FBI, and that's why he couldn't stop by, write, or drop a line. He was off saving our lives from the bad guys. But that was just a lie that I used to get by so that you wouldn't see the tears welling up in my eyes. When you're rejected by the person that you're created by, you secretly feel like you don't have a right to your life. I thought if I confronted him, then it would make it all right. But since I couldn't forgive him, it just recycled my spite. I remember meeting him for the first time. Every time a person passed by, I would ask, "Mom, is that him? I look a little like him, right?" "No?" "Oh. What about that guy?" And that was what it was like to meet the man that gave me life. To shake his hand and look into his eyes. We talked till he apologized, then said our goodbyes. I walked away on my own, then I began to cry. Now, for years after that, I acted like it was all resolved. I told him what I thought, so I figured problem solved, but it just re-evolved. My insecurities were eating at my mental health. I took it out on the world because I hated myself. That's when I finally decided I needed some help. I opened up. I started writing and sharing about my past. I got honest with myself and I started chipping at my mask. I looked into the mirror and confronted what I saw, accepting the reflection by embracing every flaw, then directing the connection into breaking down the walls by reflecting the perfection of the God inside us all. I stopped focusing on everything that I had been hateful for, and I started focusing on everything I could be grateful for. And personally, there is a lot I can be thankful for. If pain is dragging you down, just cut the ankle cord. It's when the weight lifted and I really started living. It's when my hate shifted and I really started giving. It's when my fate twisted. It was like an ego exorcism. Your mind state can be the most powerful of prisons. My father never played catch with me or gave advice. But if nothing else, that man gave me my life. And that's enough for me, if that is all he could ever give. Because I'm appreciative for every day I get to live. And even though I don't need my dad to validate me, I thought that I should write this poem to thank him for creating me. Because every moment that we are alive is like a gift. And if that's not enough to forgive, then what is? I'm staring at the number wondering if I should call. I can hear the tick-tock from the clock on the wall as it meshes with the thump-thump beat of my heart. Sometimes getting something started is the hardest part. I pick the phone up. The dial tone begins to sing. Punch his number into it and it begins to ring. 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 Hello, Mike. Hey, man, it's Adam. Your son.
Wow. Dude. I haven't experienced that. And yet I could feel all the pain.
Mm. What did it make you think and feel?
First of all, it's beautiful the way that you've turned such a traumatic event in your life into finding those nuggets of the things that you can hold on to that you're grateful for out of it. Because I always talk about silver linings, how to me I feel like there's silver linings in everything. but man, I could feel like I just wanted a hug, you know, the little boy that is so lost and all. And I'm sure it took you a while to process.
We can hug. Come on.
Oh, absolutely. Jeez. And it's like we've all gone through something, but, you know, I haven't been through that, and yet I could feel some of that pain.
Yeah.
That it made me have empathy.
Yeah.
And made me, right now, like I just wanted to hug you so bad to that.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about art is that, and specifically poetry, at least for me, is it does make people feel less alone, and it does inspire empathy. And I think empathy is what the world needs most right now.
It's
to realize that we're all in this shit together.
That's one thing I always keep saying is like, we all have to help each other through this. None of us have ever been here before. None of us have gone through this. None of us know how to get from point A to point
B.
You know, we're all trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
And even with your father, I'm sure you've probably processed this, that he'd never been a father before, or maybe he had with...
He had another family.
All right. But somehow, some way, there was something he was going through that had nothing to do with you.
You
just in that line,
right?
But he was going through something that he couldn't process or couldn't be a father.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've probably...
I have. And also, I would say, I mean, I don't want to get into specifics because... you know, I still, as much as I can, respect the privacy of that whole family.
Of course.
But I will say that what he did in life, I do very much respect what he did. And without going into the details, so this is a man that was, from my experience, complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and we're all, as I said, and as you said, figuring it out in real time. So I can't speak to what his experience was or what his emotions were and why he decided to do what he did.
Right.
But I can speak to ultimately how much of a gift it was for me, because I would not be who I am. I wouldn't be the artist that I am or the person that I am had I not gone through that. I mean, I would say when I was a kid, I did feel always out of place and search for my masculinity outside of myself. And in many ways, I think I externalized my validation, but it made me become very observant. And I think that's one of the main superpowers that I use as a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel out of place, you start to ask questions about yourself and your environment. And I think that ultimately that can be very valuable in how you navigate the rest of your life. So I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for everything that I've gone through. And by the way, for anyone who's going through something out there, you know, we don't always have to understand why. I mean, shit happens that doesn't make sense and maybe will never make sense.
Right.
But you don't have to understand it in order to decide to frame it in a way that makes you empowered by what you've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make sense of it. You just have to not blame other people ultimately when you move through your anger, which is important to move through.
Right.
Not blame yourself.
Right.
Not blame God.
Right.
And not victimize yourself to what happened. Ultimately find a way to be empowered by it, because that's a decision that only you can make.
Mm-hmm.
And I refuse to feel like a victim to any of the circumstances that have happened in my life.
And you made a choice, because you could have made a choice to be completely delinquent and make some really poor choices and inflict your pain on others, which is what happens a lot.
Yeah. And I did, by the way, you know, in my own way. You know, I would say I've lived a lot of different lives in my life, and I've worked really hard to get to be here with you right now.
Yeah.
And also to really be here with you right now.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm sure you learn from those experiences too.
Yeah, for sure.
So you can't be, I know that we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
We all do. I always say, if you can learn from your mistake, then it becomes so valuable.
For sure.
And it becomes a gift.
Yeah.
That's happened to you many times, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so that's...
You're thinking of something specific?
For sure, just in my life, how sometimes, even with my own anger or something, that I've been frustrated and gone through something, and I've inflicted pain on someone else without, you know, with just backlash, words, whatever, it had nothing to do with them. You know, it was just my own pain, and they were just in the way.
Right. It's the same thing. It's like you get triggered, and you're not actually in reality.
Right.
You bring all of this unresolved emotion from the past into this new moment, you know?
Yeah.
And if you don't get this stuff out, by the way, you take it out on someone in traffic. Or it becomes a disease.
Yeah.
You know, because it's trapped inside of you. And all emotion is energy.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find a way to positively release the energy and create something with it rather than destroy.
Right.
And ultimately, it really is about alchemy.
Yeah.
It's about integration and transformation.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So when you wanted to be a rapper.
Yeah.
Is that during the time that Eminem was around?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean...
Like the first time you ever saw it, did you see the movie?
Yes,
8 Mile, right, yeah. Amazing movie.
Amazing movie.
So was it one of those things that you were like, holy crap? Like,
yeah, I mean,
Were you already doing that?
Yeah. I was very, very into being an MC at that point.
Okay.
And I didn't want to be a rapper. I was a rapper. I just never quite figured out how to make money at it or get signed. I mean, at the time when I was doing it, you know, it was still the age of finding an A&R, you know, to sign you and put it out. These days, what's so amazing about technology is you can directly connect to the fans.
Right.
I mean, you deciding to do this amazing podcast and just, we have no idea how to quantify, you know, who will be impacted or influenced by this conversation. Maybe no, but, you know, maybe people out there are going to be like, oh, whatever. And then maybe somebody else will actually be like, wow, I thought something and felt something. But then maybe somebody else will be like, I thought something and I felt something and I'm going to do something to actually take a positive step in reality. And this is all from a room in your home.
Right.
I mean, it's beautiful.
Right. It's so powerful.
Yeah.
It's
so powerful. I didn't have that at that time. So I was making demos and performing at local clubs and stuff like that.
I know what that's like,
yeah,
dude. Singing and stuff, like trying to get signed by the A&R guy. And oh my God.
It's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing.
But even that, I want to say,
yeah,
I'm so happy doing what I'm doing right now. And hip hop will always be a foundation to my poetry. It's cellular. It's in me. And I still am a huge, huge fan of the music. In the community that I came from, we were all, you know, very, very much into rhymes, and you know, so it was a part of our DNA as well.
So that was my question that I was going to apply to you is, you have your life vision that you want it to be this.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn out to be exactly that.
It doesn't.
It's a different direction, right?
Right.
Some people get caught in, if it doesn't look exactly the way I envision, it means I'm a failure.
Right.
It means that I didn't make it.
Right.
You know, and you see other people that make it and you go, well, they got their dream, but I didn't get mine. How were you able to be fulfilled even though yours didn't look exactly the way you thought it was going to look?
Well, so there's the fairy tale answer, which is, oh, yeah, it just kind of happened very naturally. And then there's the reality of it, which
give
is
the reality.
At the time I was holding on to what I thought I wanted. What's really interesting is that people, they find something that they want and then they hold on to it to the point where they suffocate it. And then they're trying to validate themselves by succeeding in that one thing that they thought they wanted. And they don't really often pay attention to whether or not they still want it.
Mm.
So sometimes people are actually going after something for years that they don't even want anymore. They just haven't realized that they don't want it. They want to succeed for the sake of saying, well, all this time was worth it.
Right.
But if they would pivot, they would realize all the time was worth it. All the tools that they, you know, everything that they learned along the road would be better equipped to going in this new direction. But people hold on to things. You know, I talk about in the book, there's a difference between an idea and an ideology. Because an idea is a tool that you can use in your life that will change as your truth and your experience changes. But an ideology is, it's almost like a prison that you have to force everything in your reality into the frame of. And then if that ideology becomes a part of your identity,
mm-hmm.
Well, that's a whole thing, man, because that's why people can't change their minds. Because if they change their minds, they not only lose the ideology, they lose a part of who they are. It's like a fucking death. Mm-hmm. Like a part of them actually has to die for them to change their mind. And that's really scary. So they just hold on to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then in the book, I joke is that I then decided, okay, well, then I'm only going to use ideas. And I said it out loud as like a declaration to the universe, like right. I'm only going to use ideas. And then I realized I just created a new ideology.
Wow.
So that's the whole thing.
What made you want to write this book? Writing books are not easy.
Yeah, well, look, all of my poems have always been living, breathing documents. I've literally like showed up, I've performed, and then I've disappeared. And I've performed for thousands and thousands of people over the years. And then I had an opportunity with HarperCollins to create a book and to gather all of this material into one place. And the cover of the book is, it's called Inquire Within. And the cover of the book is the branches of the tree going up and the roots going down, and they're mirrored. And when you turn it to the side, it looks like lungs. Mm. And the two halves of the book are inhale and exhale. Mm. And inhale is the personal poems. It's kind of like my poetic hero's journey about my life, you know, so Father Time is in that and other stories like that, other different poems that I've written over the years. And then exhale is the social and political poems. And so it's change yourself, change the world. And I, to be honest, I don't strategize my inspiration as a writer. Like, I don't think, what does my audience want to hear? Or what's popular right now.
Yeah, you can't.
I think that's one step away from manipulation.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
And it's manipulating yourself first.
Yeah, it's unauthentic. It's not authentic
exactly.
anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think it is dangerous. That's a great word. Because you're in danger of losing your authentic voice. Mm-hmm. So in that way, all I really do is I look around and I say, what am I annoyed by? What am I inspired by? What am I moved by? And I start my poems there. And if I start my poems in a place that's true, the rest of the poem will almost write itself if I give it enough time and space.
This is Chasing Glory with Lillian Garcia.
All right, guys, I promise to get right back with the show because I love this interview. I love hearing all of these inspiring words. But I want to tell you about something right now that's going to inspire you. As you know, I'm a big advocate at taking care of yourself, whether it's mentally or whether it's physically. So let's talk about the mental game. How can you take care of yourself mentally, but at the same time have it be fun? Well, something that I found that I absolutely love are mobile puzzle games. And Best Fiends, whoa, blew me away. Okay, guys, it is so much fun. It is colorful. It is a puzzle game that anybody can do because it's just a casual play game. So you don't have to be a gamer. But your gamers, obviously, you're gonna love this too. But anybody can play this, and you collect points, you go to different levels, you can also play with people online. That's pretty fun. All right, Best Fiends, check it out because right now it is free to download. It is always free to download. That's what I love about them. So get your free download, engage your brain with fun puzzles, and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this five-star mobile puzzle game, that's right, five-star mobile puzzle game, it's not easy to get to five stars. This is a must play. You can download Best Fiends for free on Apple App Store or Google Play. And that's Best Friends without the R. Okay, so even Bray Wyatt loves this. Best Fiends, check it out now. Your mind is... All right, so something else that I absolutely love is taking care of your body. Now, if you've been following some of my IG lives, you've been seeing that I've been doing at-home workouts with templates that have come to you from RP Strength. Who's RP Strength? All right, when I was looking for a workout program with something that would help me as I'm aging and as
My body is starting to get softer and softer. I found RP Strength online. If you go to Instagram and you follow their RP Strength page, you're gonna see these before and after transformations that blew my mind, but I love their concepts. It was all about lifting heavy. And I remember I used to do that. And my body would definitely love that. I felt so like strong. Okay, but the gyms closed down. So reached out immediately to RP Strength and they had a solution because they made at-home templates. Now, I didn't have the dumbbells that they were talking about and everybody online was sold out. So I started getting creative, grabbing some workout bands that I had and also these water jugs that I had. They're available. You guys can buy them out there. Okay, so I incorporated that and started doing these IG lives so that they could actually help you and I could show you what the templates are all about. But all you have to do right now, if you haven't seen them, is just go to rpstrength.com. Now, they are doing such a deal for you because they have all these templates, they have a diet app, they have everything to set you up right now while you're at home so that you can feel better coming after this than before, okay? And all you have to do when you go to rpstrength.com, make sure you use the promo code Lillian20. That's L-I-L-I-A-N, the number 20. That's gonna get you an additional 20% off. So they had a 60% off their $99. Now with the additional 20% off on that, these templates are now only gonna cost you $31. So that's it, $31 is your investment. You can have these at-home templates that you can do and you can feel so much better about your body and then your mind. Everything will feel really good during this horrible, sad time that we're experiencing. Do something for yourself to feel really, really good. And check out, they also have one-on-one coaching. So much on there, merchandise, you're gonna love it. Go to rpstrength.com and make sure you use the promo code Lillian20. All right, now back to the show.
Now, more Chasing Glory with Lillian Garcia.
So for me to gather all of this material into one place, I've almost been able to see what I've been trying to say all of these years. And really what it ultimately boils down to is that consumerism is trying to take from us constantly. It's trying to take our likes. It's trying to take our love. It's trying to take our attention. It's trying to take our time, which we can't buy more of, by the way.
Right.
It's trying to take our information these days. And we're almost trained to externalize our validation, you know, to seek the answers outside of ourselves. So if I don't know something, I go on Google immediately or I go on YouTube immediately. And this is an amazing thing, this technology that we have that is connecting the entire world. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
It's really cool. But then there's also some dark sides to it.
It isolates us.
Yeah.
You know, people are disconnected from their communities. They're more disconnected from themselves and that internal voice, you know? So I think that what I hope is that this particular book is a window into people hearing their own voice. You know, there's a difference between using your tools and having your tools use you in terms of the technology.
Yeah.
And so if someone's going through something right now that they can't figure out, definitely you can ask a friend. You can consult a coach, but also find time to be by yourself, to sit in nature, and to just allow all the other noise to go away so that that one true voice can rise up. Because that voice is going to tell you your purpose, it's going to tell you your passion, and that's going to be your true north for where you need to go in life, to let go of those ideologies so you can get back into ideas and see what interests you right now. What is sparking you? How do you solve this particular problem that's in your life? So I'm asking people to inquire within the pages of the book. I asked myself to inquire within to create the book. And I hope that people inquire within while they're reading it so they can ultimately have a quicker route to get to their own voice, which is what I really want. That's why I think I created it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And what would you say as far as like I saw myself the other day. I went to the beach. I was like, you know what? I need some, like you were saying, nature or just beauty. And I love bike riding on the beach.
Yeah.
And yet when I was bike riding, all I wanted to do was cry. Mm. And I was upset at myself going, here, I'm in Santa Monica, beautiful boardwalk. And yet all I kept just this, well, this right here. I just like, and then I said, just let it go. Just cry. Just cry. If you don't know why you're crying, just cry. And I was in One Direction just crying. I said, if anybody's looking at me, they're like, gee, she's got broken up with or whatever they're, you know, the creation of the story that they're giving. And I'm like wanting to tell them, I don't know why I'm crying. I'm just crying. But
you're still emotional. I can feel it in you now.
No, it really hit me. Yeah. I was like, why am I crying?
What do you think you were crying about? By the way, I agree with you. It doesn't matter unless you know. But I'm asking if you know.
Yeah, that's what I think. But it's funny because by the time I turned around and came back, I felt different. And I was like, oh, that was actually a really good release. What I started processing is what we were talking about a little bit beforehand. Like right now I'm working on an album.
Right.
All right. Beautiful. I have a rapper, actually, that I'm doing it with, Josiah Williams. We did a song together and we performed it live at Powerful You.
Yeah, yeah. I remember. Oh, that was dope.
Oh,
I remember.
Thanks.
I just put it back together. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had an amazing time.
Yeah.
I felt really good. Like, it just felt, I've been missing singing.
Yeah.
But the mold thing that I was telling you about before is really attacking my vocal cords.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And attacking my sing, that part, right?
Yeah.
So, but I'm working on an album with him. And I don't know when it'll be finished. I don't know when we'll be able to perform on stage. I don't know all of these factors. And yet I'm getting the opportunity to do more and more episodes of Chasing Glory, which is great. I love doing this. But there's a part of me that if I don't perform, I feel like a failure. I feel dead. I feel... So I think that's what it was. It was like, when will I get to do more of what really like this...
Lights you up.
Yeah, I mean, the show lights me up,
of course.
But not, it's
a different part of what gets lit up.
Yeah.
It's a different area.
And right now, Chasing Glory is really getting lit up, but this is not, right? So I think
also,
life is a balance.
And also, anything that you feel underexpressed in, if you express yourself there, every part of your expression will rise. You know, it's a rising tide lifts all ships. So, you know, Chasing Glory will get better even more because you'll feel more fulfilled.
Right.
I think to your point, you know, first of all, it doesn't matter. It does if you know what it is. So the specifics of this really do matter.
Yeah.
But for anyone who's listening, you don't need to know why you're emotional. Just allow it to move through you like
just
rain,
get it out.
You know? Because as we said, if you suppress it, it gets trapped inside of you, you know? So it's actually an opportunity when you feel emotional, you know, because you might not often feel emotional.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't know how to tap into their emotions. So if you get there, it's actually like celebrate it. You don't have to be so afraid of your pain.
Yeah. At
Our
first,
whole
that was...
society is so fucking afraid of their pain that they hide it from themselves and everyone else. And this is causing a vicious, vicious cycle. So celebrate your pain. Find a way to not take your pain so seriously. And when you get those times on your own, like you were doing on the beach, of course, when you create space, you'll actually see what's there. It's like almost coming into a house that has too much art. So much art on the walls, you can't actually see any of the art. You know, so when you create that time and space for yourself, and the noise starts to fall away, you'll actually start to hear what's there.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to release something. And whether you understand it and you can actually take a positive action in reality, that's wonderful. But if you don't understand it, maybe it's just emotion that needs to move through you so you can be more in reality.
And at first I did struggle. I was feeling guilty.
Right.
I felt
guilty. That was the other thing I wanted to say to you.
Yeah.
The part of you that was struggling against it,
yeah,
the only from a loving place, and I do this myself all the time. Like all of my poems are me just talking to myself, you know, reminding myself of what I need to learn.
Right.
But as a mirror to you, I would say that's the only thing that will get in the way is if you judge yourself for having whatever feelings you're having.
Yeah.
It's like, who are you to judge yourself, man? You know?
I was feeling like I was not being grateful for the life that, right there, for the opportunity to even be on the beach.
Yeah.
Even have a bicycle.
Right.
Like, there's so many people in this world. I look at, you know, tons of documentaries or shows, and there's still women, tons of them, with these big things on their head carrying water because they have no safe waters, and they're trekking miles and miles, like 5 to 6 hours a day, just so that they could bring home water for their families every day. It's unreal that we're still experiencing a life like that. So whenever I'm feeling that, I'm going, who are you to be emotional, to have anything, tears to shed because you can't go sing a song or whatever.
But it's the same thing as putting on your mask on a flight for on yourself first before you put it on someone else. You know, I mean, in that case, it's a child. But how are you going to be able to fully take care of anyone else unless you really fully take care of yourself first? And, yeah, I mean, look, the law of attraction is a real law. You know, there's two realities right now. There's the spiritual reality, and there's the physical reality. And the physical reality, I'm sitting here, Adam, in Q, you know, and of course, like, I want people to like this conversation. I want people to like me. I have goals. I want to accomplish things. I want to live in abundance, right?
Right.
And that's my physical reality, my ego. You can't get rid of your ego because your ego is a part of your humanity. You could just learn how not to navigate it, you know, navigate from that place in the same way. And then there's the physical, the spiritual reality. The spiritual reality, you know, it's infinite out and it's infinite in. I mean, literally, most of the universe is empty space. Mm-hmm. We're all vibrating energy when you get down to the cellular level. So that means we're in a sea of consciousness right now, basically. And both of those things are true at the same time. And then within the physical space, there's the individual and there's the collective, you know? And you do have to keep all of that in mind simultaneously, in my opinion, to live my best life. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning on a day-to-day basis how to do a better job at that. But what I do know is that if the law of attraction is misinterpreted to only be happy all the time, which a lot of people think you have to do, like, I'm happy all the time, like, I'm happy all the time. That's fucking bullshit, man. You have to live all of your human experience, which is your negative emotions too. And you can't suppress them or hide from them or ignore them because, as we said, they will transform into something else. You have to allow them to move through you. And if you allow them to move through you, then you can actually release them and create something else with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I cherish all of my negative emotions that come up because they're a part of who I am. But I choose not to operate from those places in a way that perpetuates it or creates more. So when you're riding down the beach, you know, there's a long way to come to get back to you on the beach, but when you're riding down the beach and you're feeling that stuff, when you judge yourself for feeling that, I mean, you're judging the truest part of you that's coming out in that moment. Mm-hmm. And you can't argue yourself out of that with logic.
Right.
You know, what you can do is you can feel through it, you can acknowledge it, you can release it, and then you can go home and say, I'm going to do something for someone else right now. Or I'm going to be generous in a new way. You take that energy and you redirect it to create something that you want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think if more people did that, including myself, the world would be a better place.
You're right. They always say you're going to feel better when you do something for somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the thing is as a society, we are so into the me.
Yeah.
And we have this song that continues in repeat.
Right.
And that's what's making us feel so empty at the same time.
It's me to the point where it's like, you know, buy this and you'll be loved. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, it's just over and over again, like, get this, do this, accomplish this. There is never an end to more.
I know.
If more is your goal, you'll never get there.
Never.
You know?
You said you had a poem about superheroes.
Yeah.
I definitely would love for you to do that because, I mean, here in the world, especially with WWE and all that, we have superstars.
Yeah.
You know, and We have learned through many of them that have been on the show that it is a struggle getting there. And it is a struggle even once you get there. We have this vision of a superhero that we want to be a superhero, like they have it all figured out.
Right.
I don't know what yours is poem's about, but like I know it's that. And so I'm pleased to
Yeah, absolutely. I want to say, though, before I start, I think that there is this thing in society in terms of our heroes in general where we place them on this pedestal, you know.
And even me, as I was describing it, I'm like, superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something beautiful about that, but it also separates us from those people. So when I look at my heroes and I idolize them in that way, then their accomplishments, they actually... it's like almost discouraging to me rather than inspiring, because I feel like, well, I can't achieve any of that. Like, you know, they're perfect. They're, you know, they're so hot, you know. And so when we can actually look at our heroes as humans, you know, not look up to people and not look down on people. Look at people, man. And then see what they've accomplished and then be inspired by it, because they accomplished it even though they've had to go through all the things that you've had to go through in a different disguise. I think that's really beautiful. So when I have an opportunity to be with like spiritual teachers or people that I really respect and admire, you know, the question that I always want to ask them is like, when is the last time, which you've been doing, which is why I love this thing that you've created, because you've been doing this thing. When is the last time you've struggled? Or when is the last time that you've had a hard time applying one of your spiritual teachings? You know? And tell me about that. Because then I go, wow, you went through it and you still came out on the other side. And now let me figure out how to apply that to my life. You know? So. This is called Superpowers, and I wrote it in collaboration with Life is Good, the clothing company.
Oh, I love Life is Good.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're awesome. And I wrote it many years ago, and we kind of sat down and looked at all the different superheroes and superpowers, and we created this piece.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
When I think of superheroes, I think of superhuman. I think of Superman, Black Panther, and Wonder Woman. Usually they have a cape or a mask to hide their face. They have X-ray vision and superhuman strength. Some can even breathe in outer space. They fly around a while, but always come back to keep our cities safe. They're here to save humanity from itself. It's a metaphor for how we look outside ourselves for help. And while the fantasies are fun, I choose to look to me and you. Yeah, we love superheroes, but we have superpowers too. I mean, it starts with being open to this moment. If you do, then you can own it. Besides, it'll be gone before you know it, so don't blow it. You owe it to this second of eternity to show up. Embrace the possibilities and slow up. Take a breath. Look around. See the sights. Hear the sounds. Feel the ground. Notice how the gravity holds you down. You could be anywhere in the world, and yet you're here. When you embrace it as your own, you begin to overcome your fear. And real courage is looking in the mirror. It's deciding what you want to do, then making it appear. It's creating out of thin air. You must be doing something right if you got scared. Otherwise, you wouldn't care. It's a process to get here to there. We're all on the journey and we're learning. But building muscle means you're going to feel some burning. So don't deny it. Simplify it. Try it. See if it can work for you. Change perspective to get a different view. And don't forget, you better laugh at the truth. Because sometimes a sense of humor is the only thing that can pull you through. It's medicine when you can let it in. An attitude of gratitude will bubble up from within. So even when the storm clouds block the blue from your sky, you'll remember that the sun is waiting for you on the other side. And having fun is something we must decide. From the lows to the highs, it's all a part of the ride. I could throw my hands up or hold on for dear life. But I'd rather live once than have to go to hell twice. Compassion is my passion. Empathy is my gift. But my growth is incremental as my consciousness shifts. So I create from the abyss, turning my pain into gold. I'm an alchemist, an optimist, and an authentic soul. I believe that life is good, even when it hurts to see. I believe in superpowers, and I believe in you and me. I believe in superheroes, but I don't look for them above, because they exist inside us all, and we save the day with love.
Wow, dude. My gosh, that fits so perfectly with everything that we were talking about.
Mm.
Wow. You saw my reaction on that one line, too.
Yeah.
About going to hell twice.
Rather live once than have to go to hell twice.
Whoa. I mean, you really do have a gift.
Thank you.
Do you, how hard is it for you to memorize all of this?
You know, that the foundation of my art is rhyming.
Yeah.
It's not hard. And people will always come up to me afterwards because I'll do hour-long shows.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
And you've memorized everything. You don't just riff on the fly.
No. So, for example, like the book that we did, the Inquire Within book, you know, that has 60 illustrations. So we worked with an amazing illustrator in London called Musta Sharik. And he did all these really beautiful images that bring you deeper into the poetry. So that's like one way to experience it. And then we just finished the audiobook.
Mm.
And the audiobook is 2.5 hours of me doing these poems.
Good.
And I took it so seriously. You know, I really wanted to do justice and service to these pieces. And I'm so, so proud of the audiobook. But it's 2.5 hours, and literally, I've memorized the whole thing.
Wow.
So I could start it at the beginning and just go. And so people will come up to me often, and they'll be like, how do you do that? Like, that's so unbelievable. You must be a savant or something like that. It's not at all that. It's just I've put in my hours. And if you look at any MC that you respect, you know, from Kendrick Lamar to Nas or Jay-Z or Eminem, as you said, you know, if you told them to take all of their verses and cut out the choruses and you had no music, they've memorized hours and hours. They could tie them together for hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people really are geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're poetic geniuses of our time. And for whatever reason, some people don't acknowledge that. But that is the foundation of my memorization. It's from hip-hop. And there's many, many, many MCs out there who have the same muscle.
You've done so much already in your career. I can just imagine what it is that you want to fulfill, which I do want to know.
Yeah.
What it is that, what's your goal, what's your vision? Unless you don't, unless you're just like, whatever happens, happens, because some people go through that.
Yeah.
But you've already done so much, too. Does it feel like you've done so much? Does it feel fulfilling? Does it, mm-hmm. like sometimes people look at me and they'll say, wow, you've done this and this and that, whatever. And I'm going, yeah, sometimes I forget that I've done that. And sometimes I go, yeah, but I've had this one goal.
Right.
You know, that you just kind of, I mean, I don't know.
What is your one goal?
Well, like I said, music. I just want to do more music.
Right.
I want that to be more of the what I do. But then I go, maybe the world needs me in this other capacity that I'm just not allowing myself to break that vision. Like, it has to look one way.
Yeah. I mean, when I transitioned from, you know, rapping into poetry, there was that part of me that had to let go of that ideology at that time.
You did.
And when I did, I opened up this whole new flow of life. But if I did feel unexpressed in other areas, I find ways to express. Because, as I said, I know that anything that's unexpressed in one area. You know, it can't all come out through this genre of poetry. There has to be other ways. You know, so songwriting has been huge for me.
Yeah, you've done a lot with different songwriters, from Selena Gomez to, you worked with Mike Posner.
Mike Posner, Allo Black, Foster the People.
I love Foster the People.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah, Mark Foster's an awesome, awesome guy. Yeah, I ended up getting a publishing deal actually in that transition phase, because I knew I was a poet and I knew I wanted to figure out how to do that for a living, but it's a genre that was very difficult to monetize. So, you know, my community, there was some of the most talented people and still are, but it was hard for us to figure out how to make a living.
Yeah.
So I turned 30 and I was still like really struggling. I mean, I didn't go to college. I went to San Fran State for a year. I got out. I went to SMC for like 6 months. I was miserable. I got in a fist fight on campus and I was like, I'm out of here, you know, and I never went back.
Yeah.
And I just started pursuing art. So there was many, many years of just getting by. And I couldn't figure out how to turn the corner and really make a living in my poetry. And I had this opportunity to get a publishing deal with a company called Rock Mafia. Mm-hmm. And they're a production team, a writing team. They're a record company at this point. They have many studios in Santa Monica. And they've become a family as well. And they gave me an opportunity to write with all of these different artists. And that financial foundation and creative outlet was huge, because first of all, creatively, I was forced to do things I had never done. I was forced to think about someone else's experience in my writing.
Mm-hmm.
I was forced to think about how to be round with my syllables, how to fit more information into less words.
Right.
You know, I mean, my rhymes are choppy, they're rhythmic. This was very different, right? And yet I learned so much, and all the tools that I learned when I went back to writing for myself, I had more tools in my toolbox to use.
Mm-hmm.
So that creatively was huge. And then financially, I mean, it gave me freedom to pursue my poetry, which is what I'm really, really passionate about. And so, you know, that was an absolute gift for me, and a gift that was unexpected. And I had to be open to my life changing to be able to take that route.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously push towards the things that you want to create in your life, but also be aware of the gifts that are all around you that you might not be seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm at now, I really, really believe in this art form. And I believe in it for myself, but I believe it for many, many other poets that are out there that I look up to, you know, that are a part of my community, and the poets that have yet to come. I mean, my dream is that 8-year-old boys and girls are going to be like, I want to be a poet when I grow up. And I don't think that there's any reason that poets shouldn't be on magazine covers and on late night and have their own sitcoms. And, you know, and I think that if you want to break a genre, you have to make a star. And if you make a star, it's an anomaly. But if you make a few, it's a movement. And, you know, Saul Williams, like Rudy Francisco, you know, Sekou Andrews, Shihan the Poet, these people are stars.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just proud to be a part of this wave, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it crashes.
I'm sure you're inspiring somebody right now. I'm sure somebody from this whole audience that's watching this goes, that's what I want to do.
Beautiful.
Right? I just know it.
And by the way, even if you don't want to do it for your living, just do it. You know,
just for fun.
For fun, for an opportunity to express, for a new experience. You know, think of a moment in your life. The workshops that I do, I mean, I have all these prompts, but really they're just platforms for people to explore their own stories through a genre they would never usually use, and then to be celebrated for it by expressing it. So it's just, you know, choose a moment in your life that changed who you are as a human being, and just sit down and write for a half an hour. And I don't have any rules for poetry. I think if you intend it to be a poem, it's a poem. So you have to intend something to be a poem, and then you have to choose something that is moving and meaningful to you. Mm-hmm. If you do that, I promise you it will be surprising how quickly it comes out. And then choose somebody in your life that you want to share it with, and just read the poem to them, create the space, and then see what they think and feel, and allow it to be supportive and constructive and positive and curious, and then ask them questions, and it will deepen your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wow. Well, I want to thank you, because seriously, even just doing the research for this led me to hearing more of your poems, and as my eyes were watering every single time.
Thank you.
I was like, my God, I mean, you do move me. Even your Instagram, I want you to tell people how to find you.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. If you want to get the book is on my website, which is in-q.com, or you can, of course, get it on Amazon or local bookstores. It's with HarperCollins, so it should be everywhere. And it's out now when this comes out.
Yeah,
you know,
awesome.
So please support, because the more that you spread the word, the more that we can get this out into the world. And I'm really, really proud of this. I'm horrible at self-promotion. It's always been my least favorite thing. Like, if we were hanging out, like, I really want to be with you. I don't be like, yo, we're at the fucking thing.
And, I know, but you got to, because...
But you have to.
You have to, because you have something that can help people.
Yeah.
And that's what is, and that's the way you got to look at it.
Yeah. And this is separate from me now. I feel that it's outside of me. You know, so I feel it's a joy to promote this, because I feel that I want it to have a life of its own now.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then on social media, it's at NQ Life. And if you do buy the book, you know, tag me, let me know what you think of it. I definitely want to know what everybody thinks of the book.
Love that.
You know, spread the love and spread the poetry.
Yeah. As I was finding out about your name, NQ, then I found out that it was because it was in question.
Yeah.
That's what it means, right? Because you just had a lot of questions.
When I was 15, my friend was like, you know, I was rhyming, and he was like, your rap name should be Inquiry.
Inquiry.
And so it was Inquiry.
Yeah.
And then people started calling me NQ, and then people started calling me Q, and then eventually it kind of transitioned into In Question. And so I've had that my whole life. You know, people have been calling me Q forever, and it's ingrained in me. You know, if I go to a dinner party and I'm like, oh, I'm NQ, I sometimes feel like a douchebag, but... It's really a part of who I am.
So you don't resonate with Adam very
no,
much?
No, I do. I mean, you know, people who are close to me sometimes call me Adam, but most people wind up calling me Q.
Got it.
Yeah.
I think it...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's almost a persona, too.
Yeah.
That you create that you can identify with.
It was probably my own superhero at the time.
Yeah.
And now I'm learning how to integrate and align so that they're one and the same. And I just wanted to thank you very much for having me, because I mean this, you know, anytime I'm on a podcast, you know, you've created a relationship with your audience and they trust you, you know, and you've done many, many, many episodes. I think it's the 137
something or
episode,
something. Yeah.
Which is crazy. And so they trust you, they believe in you, they know you, they love you, or people are just listening for the first time. And, so for you to open up a space to bring me here and allow me to share my work, that means something to me. Mm. And I honor that. I acknowledge that. It doesn't go unnoticed.
Thank
and I wanted
you.
To say it out loud.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I know when I saw you do your thing on stage, we were powerful women in Utah, and I was like, man, I just got to get you on. And I'm very selective as to you know, who comes on the show, because I really do want to provide something that the audience is going to get something out of their hour, not go, God, I just want my hour back.
Right.
I want them to feel like,
for sure,
wow, I got to listen to that again.
For sure.
Which a lot of times is what people do. They'll be like, I'm going to listen, you know, they'll listen to it multiple times.
Right.
Just to literally get it ingrained. But as we do wrap this up, I want to ask you, because I always love to ask this, although you've kind of touched it on a little bit, but, you know, as you're a kid looking at your life, has your chase for glory looked the way you thought it was going to look?
Mm. Great question. I think, you know, it's a question in my mind in hearing that is, there was many times when I thought I was chasing glory, but I was actually running from something, you know, and I think, you know, whatever gives you motivation or fuel to approach something in your life and be obsessive about it, you know, it can be really positive, because it made me the writer and performer that I am. But at a certain point, I realized that my fuel source was unsustainable and needed to change where my fuel source was coming from. You know, when I started out, it was just pure love. But then, of course, it gets co-opted by the ego and by validation and by success and, you know, this externalization of everything. And I think now, you know, I've realized that it needs to come back to that pure place, because otherwise, you know, I'll keep going, but I'll crash, you know. And I had this thing, I talk about this in the book too. There was this one time I was going through a breakup, it's like many years ago, and it ties back around. And I was like, I went through a breakup, I'm going to come home, I'm going to write my breakup poem, you know? Mm-hmm. So I come back to my house, I sit down, I'm about to write my breakup poem. And then I'm like, you know, let me read over my other breakup poems first. Because I had other breakup poems. Mm-hmm. So I'm embarrassed to admit, but I had 9 of them. It wasn't 9 women, but it was 9 breakup poems.
Yeah.
Just like 30 minutes of material.
Okay.
So I literally sat there alone and I read all of this material to myself. And at the end of it, I realized, wow, like I don't need to write another breakup poem because all of these old breakup poems are applicable to my current breakup. So I need to figure out why I'm continuing to create the same lesson in a different disguise over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I realized that in my writing, I was perpetuating some of these stories. And I realized my fuel source was unsustainable. And so from that point on, anything that I created, it's not that I ignored my pain, as we talked about. I incorporated it in, but I always wound up bringing it in the end to hope for myself and hope for the audience. I want people to feel at the end of these pieces that they have infinite possibility and empowerment to take on their life how they see fit. So, you know, at this point, I think the sky is the limit, but I want to make sure that my fuel source is coming from the right place still, because I think that'll be the thing that will allow me to continue to be inspired for the rest of my life.
Do you feel like you've already obtained glory? Like in the glory that... Or is that something that's still, like, you know, that's the one thing that I've known, just the words chasing glory.
Yeah.
It's like, that can mean
so many
different things.
It's deep. It's
it
a deep
is.
Title.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think glory is a journey, not a destination.
Yeah.
It's a process, not a product. And, you know, I am the journey.
You are. That's exactly why I always say, even here, I'm like, you'll be hearing the journey. And
right.
I don't even call it really an interview.
Right.
You'll be hearing someone's journey.
Right.
That's what it is. And it is the fun of it all, the crazy of it all, the lessons of it all. It is. And
it's
not when you obtain it. Because it's, like you said, we all could want more.
Right.
And there is no really final destination except for death.
Right. Exactly.
That's it. Like, that's the glory.
So what do we have? We have now. And
then
what are we going to do with now?
Yeah.
You know, and I this was a really valuable way to spend my now.
I love it. Thank you. You've been amazing.
Thank
Seriously.
You.
I needed this
yeah.
today just to feel like even the discussion of like, it was still in my head. Why was I crying? You know, but now it's okay.
Good.
That's all right.
Do you want to hear one more?
I do.
Okay.
Finish it off with
all
this.
Right.
Yes, please.
This is called Learn Fear, and this is, you know, based on what we were talking about in the beginning, which is, I think, finding your voice.
Oh, great.
Learned fear can be overcome when you realize the voice inside your head is not yours. It's an imitation of the voices from before, repeating on a loop inside your quiet core, receiving since your youth when your choices weren't even yours, perceiving was the proof. But reality has many doors, so why are we still fighting other people's wars? Learned fear can be overcome when you realize the voice inside your head is not yours. It's an imitation of the voices from before, repeating, repeating, repeating on a loop inside your quiet core, and you can't tell the difference because it sounds the same. But trust me when I tell you, most of what you think is from somebody else's brain. They have us trained, shackled, by imaginary chains, imaginary rules for imaginary games. But they don't know the reasons either, so where should we place the blame? And who is they anyway when we're all the same? Our parents had parents, and their parents had parents. Apparently it hurts to see, so I'll be transparent. The world is so much bigger than your insecurities. And they don't speak on your behalf without your soul's authority. The world is so much bigger than your culture or community, and they don't speak on your behalf without your soul's authority. Because if it's all a story, then nobody else can tell it for me. Since I'm always transforming, I defy a category. When you do the same thing the same way, it's habit forming. But nothing in this land of woman and man is mandatory. It's all just transitory. Our world's a laboratory. Experimenting on today can change tomorrow morning. And since matter is mostly empty space, we're in a sea of consciousness where the boundaries are erased. So I stared at my reflection until I couldn't see my face. Then I picked myself and put the flowers in an empty vase. If you came for validation, then you're in the wrong place. The only certain satisfaction is becoming what you've chased. And there's no running from the inner voice. So it's important that you choose, but it's more important that you know you have the choice. You have a choice. Are you living someone else's life? You have a voice. Does it haunt you in the dead of night? Would you fly if you weren't convinced to be afraid of heights? And who convinced you anyway? They had no fucking right. Right? No one can dim your light. You shine within so bright that you could blind the sun from sight and scare him back into the night. No one can dim your light. I said it twice because you're greater than the circumstances that surround your perfect life. You're not your nature or your nurture, you're a prototype. And if you hone it right, eventually you'll hack your satellite. At first it's nothing. The nothing turns into a whisper. Turn the dial and it gets crisper in your transistor. Wait a while and the whisper turns into a scream. It overwhelms your system and you won't know what it means. But pump the volume up and it can tell you all your dreams till pretty soon it's the only voice you'll ever need. Now all you have to do is listen when you want to lead. Your fear disintegrates when you decide to stop and breathe. It's your authentic voice. And no matter where you go, it never leaves. And that's God, no matter what religion you believe. I'm starting my own religion. And everyone is welcome. But nobody can join. If you did, you'd miss the point.
Wow. Tremendous.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely tremendous. What a way to close out the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, really.
Oh, my God. No, thank you. This was amazing. So, woo! All right. Let's go out and live our lives. And like I said, that was therapy. That was therapy. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
This is Chasing Glory with Lillian Garcia.
And there you have it. In Q. I told you, awesome guy. What a talent. Bringing something so different to the world. Because there's not a lot of poets out there. Or maybe there are, but we just really don't know them. We hear about the past poets, you know, years and years and years and years ago. But man, in Q, what a style, what a flair, what a way to be able to say a poem. And I told you guys that I would read my poem. Again, this is the one that I wrote the night after the interview. I went to bed, and as I laid there to fall asleep, all these words came rushing out. I wrote them all out the next day. When I read this, I was like, whoa, I didn't even know that that came out of me. Like, what was I thinking? But I'm going to go ahead and share it with you. It's my first poem ever written. I do write songs, but this is a little different. All right, here we go. It's called TikTok. The clock's ticking loud as it's meant to be. With a mood in its heart as it stares at me. The judgment below and the enemies, all chiming loud as a frenemy. Tick-tock, tick-tock, it screams at me. The impatient declared as it embraces me. I said it before too many times to score, that the sound in my heart is all a roar. Don't despair the wounds of my heart. For the lessons they've learned is what sets me apart. I separate the willows and the cries from above to stand strong from a place of love. As I float over chaos that hovers below, I quench my thirst
with an unending flow. So tick tock, tick tock. I'm in total control of the pieces that fell so far down below. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me the space to share that with you. It is a little vulnerable for me. Why? Because I know some of you are going to be like, what did that mean? You know, it doesn't even matter. Make it mean whatever it's supposed to mean for you. It's like a painting, right? When you see a painting, 10 people could see the same painting and have 10 different things that the painting meant to them. Poems are the same way. So again, I challenge you. Go out there and write a poem. Don't over-criticize yourself. Don't over-analyze it. None of that. Just let your heart pour out and do it. Thank you guys for joining me on Chasing Glory. Remember to follow the show at Chasing Glory on Instagram, at Lillian Garcia on Instagram and Twitter for myself, and Lillian Garcia official fan page on Facebook. And remember, for all things Chasing Glory, just go to chasingglory.com. Thank you for the 5-star rating. Keep those up. Make sure you write a review. Tell me how this episode hit you, please. I'd like to read those next week on next week's episode. All right, for now, go out there and live with much peace, love, and passion. And remember, always be yourself. Trust that it's enough. I love you dearly. Bye.
Thanks for joining us here on Chasing Glory from executive producer Lillian Garcia.